Okay, Councillor Andrew Palin stepped in as chair for tonight's meeting. We are currently on agenda item 6A, which is the Environment for Planning and Regeneration Service. We've just had a from the head, Richard, and also Councillor Vardy, where we are in terms of where the funds are required for the short gap in the planning. I've reviewed that and I can clearly see within the document the positions that are required. I've also reviewed the risk assessment, and I can see the risk in there. The overall risk is moderate, and again that is to maintain the effective project management through the LDF project board. Okay, so I've got no more to say on that. Any other members?
Chair, if I may just say, I think the risk you're referring to there was for the second item.
I apologise.
From planning, which is to do with the local development scheme.
Sorry, my apologies.
With respect to the environment report, point to page 10 of the agenda pack.
Yeah.
No specific risks are identified with this decision because the environment lies within budget.
Okay. Are we all happy with the reports that we've seen tonight?
Yeah, one thing I would like to ask, if that's possible, just for and this is really for my own information, is it just an explanation of the difficulties that we're having with recruiting? Because you did hint at that, and I just wondered exactly what the situation was.
Well, I think that yes, it's been quite historic. It's in fact over the last 6 or 8 years or something like that. There's been an increase in difficulty in recruiting, particularly those at the high grades within the management structure. And the simple fact is that it's competitive. Planners are required by developers as well. And the developers are there, and they are offering a more attractive package than the council is. And I think that is leaving a very small pool of people that we can draw from nationally, which is where try to attract nationally, and it is a concern to me, and so I know it's a concern to the seeing Richard and his senior staff members about recruiting. Within the terms of that, you've got to respect that officers have been very flexible, some officers in the department are flexible and trying to take over new roles and assist in wherever they can. However, it has left us sometimes with gaps that need fulfilling, and we can't fill them. And when therefore we go to agency workers, and agency workers are consequently a more expensive item for us to contend with, and that's where the amount is as it is. I think
that's right. Yeah. For you, Chair, furthermore, just to add to that, I mean, we are recognising the national shortage of planners, and part of the service review was to set in place posts for apprentices, junior posts where we can grow our own with a view to feeding the pipeline of planners into the future, and that's been a very successful strand of the service review.
Sure. Just you mentioned about the agency workers and things. Obviously, the agency costs more. Mm-hmm. I haven't got any figures or anything for us. Would it? You say the packages outside the council are more attractive because they're higher. Is there any way of like making them higher rather than overspending on agency?
I think you can get a proper answer from Richard in a moment. My view is the problem with that is that if you've got somebody at a high level. And that they, that kind of level of remuneration and position within the council, you're going to get somebody in another department who has perhaps an equal area of responsibilities and things like that saying, well, Well, we want that as well, and it becomes a difficult thing because we've only got a finite budget that we can meet to. You know, the difficulties we're having there, we have been having there, we're having to manage things very carefully. And so you say, well, what's going to fall off the shelf if you start paying people more? Because then it will percolate down, you know, the other people will want. It becomes very, very complex, Richard.
That's right. There are policies in place in the council for which seek to manage the level of pay across the whole workforce, and there's the job evaluation area as well, which evaluates posts like against a set of criteria. So it is what it is. Actually, when you look at the posts that we've got in the service compared with our immediate neighbours, we are of a kind. You know, we're certainly now of a kind. We've stopped this issue of staff jumping ship to a neighbouring authority for an extra £500. So, you know, we've now managed to develop, almost equal pay across the county. And furthermore, in our service, we've got career grades for, you know, the jobbing planners, so that they don't need to move to another authority, you know, when they're going through their formative years and gaining the ground. The problem we've got, as Councillor Vardy said, is with the officers that have got that have the expertise, and management expertise in particular. There is a national shortage of planners in that sort of area. You know, sort of like 10 years experience and, you know, able to carry responsibilities. There is a shortage. Those that are good are employed by others who are able to pay more money, whether that's the private sector or other organisations that require planners. We've got a cohort of workers who are less concerned about the wider benefits package that councils provide, such as the pension, you know, the flexi time. They're more interested in more financial drivers than the wider package, it seems. So it's an issue that is affecting lots of other councils up and down the country. So the only resort is to, as Councillor Vardy said, to try and grow your own, or to spread the work around the workplace in a way which helps to manage the resource that we've got. And where we do require the extra capacity, we have to draw on agency workers to provide that. And we actually have 8 vacant posts in service at the moment, but only 4 agency workers, so we are managing the work to try and prioritise it, you know, and utilise agency workers where that's a last resort.
Is everybody happy what we've heard from the lead men, Mark and Richard? And from my perspective, I can see it's being managed. It's been highlighted there is a national shortage, and I'm more than happy that it goes back to council, that the funding is done. So I'm happy with that.
So you're supporting the...
Yes, we're supporting it, yeah.
As a chair.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much, Richard. Can we back on again?
We are, could we?
Right, so we're now looking at item agenda 6P, which is the Charnwood Local Development Scheme for 2019. We have recommendations that the revised programme for the preparation of the local development documents are set out in the local development scheme. This report. The authority is delegated by the head of planning, regeneration, consultation of the lead member for planning, inward investment, tourism, to make the minor technical graphical amendments to the local scheme prior to its publication. So over to you, Councillor Barton.
Thank you, Chairman. Yes, this is an annual report that comes to Cabinet, which enables us to refresh our local development scheme timeline. Just to go forward to my notes now, members will recall that the council is required to prepare a 3-year programme for the preparation of local plan documents and to keep this up to date each year. Last year's programme anticipated an accelerated plan preparation process. Some of you may recall that the last plan, who were around, the last plan took, you know, probably 4 or 5 years of intense difficulties to get the plan from beginning to end, perhaps even a bit longer. But, you know, it was there because of legislation and various other things. We were hoping, and we still will be doing, this plan in a much shorter time frame. So anyway, so this year's programme takes account this year's programme takes account of all that slippage in the adoption of the local plan in November 2020 rather than January 2020, with the preparation of two supplementary planning documents, the design and planning applications. So what I'm trying to say is that this is, you know, just knock out a plan where you're going to go. This is all the detail. Some of you may be living in villages or whatever, or other areas will know that there's been assessments carried out about the local economy and things like that. All these all add to it, and character assessments, character appraisals, etc. And they all add up, they all take time to bring together, because each level has then had to go out for consultation, and in here there are several weeks of consultation that we have to do. So there has been, you can see that the timeline is the draft local plan was published in due to be published in October 2018. Richard, tell me if I'm right, it's now July 2019. The reason that is, and I have to say, some part of this is down to me. Not only have you heard previously about staffing issues and shortages, this was due to come out I'm just giving an example here. The consultation on one of the plans for public consultation due to come out in April, and then come to. But the problem is, then we've got a new council coming in May. And I think it's more important that the new council, who are going to be the governors of this process, that they are involved in that process rather than the tail end of this administration. So I've just allowed 2 or 3 months for it to move over a little bit. That's why there's a little bit extra in there. So that we can be realistic. And I just need to, as I took the last plan through, there was member engagement, community engagement through the whole of the process, and that is our vision. This is what we will do, this is what we want to do, what we will do as this plan goes forward. Okay, Richard.
Yes, thank you, Councillor Vardy. The plan which we put forward to Cabinet last year, as Councillor Vardy said, anticipated adopting the new local plan in January 2020, so we're now saying November 2020. So it's about a 10-month slippage overall. And some of that, of course, is, as Councillor Vardy has said, is due to us wanting to respect a new administration when it comes into office. But also we've had some issues during the last year, competing priorities around servicing the strategic growth plan that's been going on, and also issues with some staff sickness. And some of you will be familiar with some of the absences that we've had in the service, been long-term absences. We talked about the issues around recruitment as well, which have had an impact. So all taken together, those things have amounted to a 10-month slippage. So the new plan, which we've set out before members, takes account of that, and we think the plan that we've got is realistic given what we know now. It's always difficult to plan for uncertainties that might happen down the line, but we think all things being equal, we can.
I would imagine that throughout this process, although this is how our vision, this is what the evidence is leading us to this timeline,
yeah.
But, you know, we've got all sorts of dynamics at play, the economy, government policy to do with planning. We know this, goodness me, they are churning that up. And so it might well be that this might not be the end timescales, but it's the one that is evidenced at the moment.
Okay. And again, that was a question that we did speak about, that based on what we've actually got before us all today, that the end date of November 2020, again, it's an ever shifting sand, whatever, but we feel confident as a council where we are today that that is the achievable.
It's certainly achievable. What we don't know, of course, is what will happen through consultation.
Yes.
What people will say about the proposals that we put forward. We don't know what will happen in the future around changes to government policy, which require us to go away and take another look at the plan and whether it's in accordance with that change. So there's all sorts of things that we don't have control of, but of the things we do have control of, we think it's a realistic time frame as we stand at the moment.
We can control what we've got control of.
Yeah,
happy with that.
Well, I did want to ask a question. Jeff gave us an insight into why we're not have the community infrastructure levy operating. But I'd just like to ask a more general question, which is, to what extent are we happy with the infrastructure that we're getting, with the funds that we're getting from developers to pay for infrastructure? So are we getting as much as we need, given the changes that we need to make to infrastructure to accompany these extra people?
So, through you, Chair, the developments that are in our current plan, the plan developments have a very specific list of infrastructure requirements attached to them, and then we seek to secure those through legal agreement when the applications come forward, when the developers are making applications for planning permission. So there's very strict tests set out in regulations, the community infrastructure levy regulations, for how you go about deriving those infrastructure contributions. They have to be necessary, reasonably related in scale and kind, and I can't remember the last one, forgive me, there are three tests that have to be met, and if they're not met, then that obligation can't be secured. Now, if you've got a basket of planning obligations which are necessary to enable the development to go ahead, but the development can't pay for it, there's a question mark as to whether you should be granted planning permission at all.
Exactly.
Now, with a plan development, you wouldn't be able to prepare a plan that was unsound in that way. You know, you have to do an assessment as to whether the basket is viable. But when you have unplanned development, sometimes developments come forward and the basket isn't viable. Some of the things that might fall off the edge of the basket are affordable housing. And in those cases, at Planning Committee, members have to decide whether the harm from that is outweighed by the public benefit of the development. Does that help? Does that answer your question?
It does to some degree about process, but yeah. More widely.
So
I guess the wider question would be, are we happy that what fell off was reasonable?
Through you, Chair, I think that developments which come forward that are unplanned developments through the planning process, through applications for planning permission, whether it's acceptable or not is a matter for the Plans Committee. And you know, you need to ask the members that are involved in that decision making as to whether they thought it was reasonable. From an officer point of view, we'll put the reports forward and allow members to make that balance and that judgment. Generally speaking, developments don't go forward unless they've got the basket of mitigating infrastructure. As I say, the only thing that tends to fall off is affordable housing, and that's a matter for the members.
There is another thing, a recent piece of relatively recent piece of regulation or legislation talking about the developer says, well, we can make the basics of it sustainable, but we can't provide the affordable housing, then we just don't accept that, then it goes to a kind of arbitration with the district valuer, who looks at that scheme and says, well, no, developer, you're wrong here, because you should have your pricing structure, this, that, the other, is not correct. If you did this, it could make it, it could be affordable. No, we don't accept your argument. On the other hand, if it does work out, then you know, then they can say, well, okay, these houses wouldn't be built in any case. We need to have housing, and they would allow it to go through with that, you know, with that, that viability matter resolved that way. So it goes to independent. We don't just say, somebody says, well, we can't afford the affordable housing. I'm just trying to explain to you that it's progressed by professionals that we take on board to assess that and to come up with an evidence conclusion.
You're quite right, because a lot of these are is all evidence based, as you clearly say, where it's a fell out of the basket and what are the effects. So, and again, it's each on its merit.
Yeah.
Are there any more questions from any other councillors? Okay. Are you happy to accept the recommendations?
So you're supporting?
Yes, we are supporting
the
recommendations, yeah. again, thank you, Councillor Vardy. Thank you, Mr. Bennett.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Okay, good
night
all.
Thank you. Bye. Okay, so we now move on to item agenda C, which is for the Children and Young People Strategy 2019-24. And we have the Cabinet Lead Member, Councillor Taylor. Do you want to start off,
Thank you, Chair. So this report brings forward the Children and Young People Strategy 2019-2024 for approval. This strategy builds upon the previous 2015-2018 Children and Young People Strategy, and the annually updated action plans from this strategy have demonstrated that the Council and our multi-agency partners have achieved considerable successes. Those are shown on page 36 to 37, and they include over 700 safeguarding training contracts that have been made with individual staff. A trained designated safeguarding officer team has ensured that 100% of reported concerns meeting safeguarding thresholds with record action taken. Over 27,000 attendees by children and young people at Charnwell Borough Council's led sports and active recreation activities. Coordination of agencies working with young people not in education, employment and training has contributed to Charnwell's achieving the target level of NEET below 4% every year. Coordination of agencies working with young people has contributed to a year-on-year decrease in the number and rate of young people, falling from 40.1 in 1998 to 23.4 in 2012 and 13.9 in 2016. 22 opportunities for children and young people to be involved in service design and delivery have been provided. The Children and Young People Strategies 2019-2024 has been developed in order to ensure that we meet our statutory responsibilities in relation to safeguarding outlined in the Children's Act 2004 and Working Together to Safeguard Children's Statutory Guidance 2018. It also ensures that we action the commitments from the Council has made to residents, including children, young people and their families within our corporate plan. At county level, the strategy is aligned to the County Council's Leicestershire Children's and Families Partnership Plan 2018-2021, which in turn is overseen by the County's Health and Wellbeing Board. Loki, it links with the Sports and Physical Activity Commissioning Plan, the Quality Strategy and the Community Safety Partnership Plan and the Charnwell and Think Family Partnership. In preparing this strategy as a named partner in the Leicestershire Children and Family Partnership Plan, we have adopted the shared vision for children and families within our borough. This is children and young people in Charnwell are safe and living in families where they can achieve their full potential. Consultation with internal and external stakeholders set out on pages 69 to 71 has supported us approach in retaining the three strategic objections that we developed for the 2015-18 strategy. These are objective one, keeping children and young people safe and free from harm. Two, integrated working and early intervention. And three, children and families. The strategy outlines the Council's responsibility for each of these and details how we will comply with our responsibility, including our work with multi-agency comments on pages 51 to 54. The Associated Action Plan provides a mechanism to set out and review on an annual basis the specific actions that we take to comply with our responsibility and support areas of work for which we're not responsible but can contribute to as part of a multi-agency response. A copy of the 2019-20 Action Plan is attached at pages 57 to 68. Duration of the strategy to 2024 is intended to cover both the current and upcoming corporate plan. However, should there be significant changes in the vision laid out in the upcoming corporate plan, or with our strategy duties towards children and young people that can't be adequately accounted for in the annual action plan review, the strategy will be refreshed accordingly. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Councillor.
No, just to add to that, as set out in the report, the draft strategy and action plan was considered by Policy Screening Group in November. We listened to what they had to say and we've taken on board their actions, so we've shortened the strategy and hopefully, as you'll see, made it more user-friendly and environmentally. And the plan is also to have a shorter version that will be used as a snapshot and overview. And also we were asked to provide details of who we'd consulted with, so that's included in the Appendix C. I just wanted to apologise because I noticed yesterday when I was re-looking at it that the page numbers have gone a bit wonky on the strategy. I don't know how that's happened, but we'll definitely have a look at that. And there's a sentence on page 45 that shouldn't be in there either. About the diagram and Appendix 1. So that was one of the things that we shortened to try and make it shorter as part of the feedback from Policy Screening Group and remove the appendix because we didn't think it added any value, but that sentence has remained in there. So I just need to make sure that's deleted as well before we
publish. Yeah, I was actually sat on that committee, so yeah. Yeah, it's Policy Screening, I do remember that one.
So two of you were there.